we are unnecessary.
I think the band is...
I think we can get started now. It's 9:15. We want to welcome the minister here to the session. Also the members, visitors, and staff. I saw the legal team here a few minutes ago from the minister's office and from the state attorney's office. I don't see them now. Yeah, they're coming now. Members from the NCC, welcome, Mr. Jefter. Just before we go into the program, there are apologies from Dr. Kwele. He's still busy out in Northwest. The Honorable Fakey is... She has permission from Parliament. She's busy with studies. And as we reported last week, the Honorable Abram is still off on medical grounds. He had an operation on his eyes recently. Again, then, Minister, welcome. At the last meeting and even the previous meeting when we were dealing with the two bills dealing with the NCC, the Intelligence Service Amendment Bill, and the National Strategic Intelligence Amendment Bill, numerous questions came up, and there was particular concern that your staff or the team, the drafting team that was present, was not in the best position to answer the questions. Some of the questions related to policy, and it was the feeling of the committee that perhaps it would be appropriate to get the minister here just to give some input on those issues which are related to policy and perhaps some of the more technical issues. But before I hand over, Minister, perhaps I need to warn the members again, particularly those members that are on the JSCI. It is not the intention of this meeting to canvass and look into very deep and operational issues that relate to the NCC. As members of the JSCI, most of the members of this committee will know that some of these things are classified and that it is not meant to be dealt with in open meetings. And so I would caution the members again, when putting questions to the minister, to be very careful on the questions that are put. We've got a piece of legislation in front of us. We need just to understand the legislation. We don't need to get too deep into the operational issues. That's something which can be taken up with the JSCI if needs be, but certainly not in this forum. So if I do stop you, it's not because I want to limit you in your line of questioning. It would merely be because it would be my discretionary opinion that the question perhaps would be unfair in the circumstances. So I don't know if the minister has an opening speech. I think the way we would deal with this is those of you that have raised questions regarding the two bills, and at this stage we're dealing entirely with the two bills which I've just mentioned and not with the information bill. You will get an opportunity to put your questions, but perhaps we should just give the minister opportunity to say, make his opening speech, if there is one.
Thanks very much, Chairperson, and good morning to you and to the honourable members and the observers here from civil society, media included. Thanks very much for that opening. Of course, in terms of the bills, we are going through that unique process of the executive providing the legislature with a bill, in this case two bills. And that's not only an oversight issue, it's to help to correct any flaws in those bills that, in your wisdom, you might see, to help us to ensure that these bills can be improved and enriched. So from that point of view, I come here a very gladly at your request and always open to that request, not wanting to force my way in here. It's only if you need me. This is why we send the officials. But to really indicate that this is a process, it's a teamwork effort, and obviously the legislature is in the best position to engage with the public, with the Fourth Estate, with civil society, and to give them the necessary hearings which you're going about. So I don't come here nervous of any possibility that a sentence might be mangled and a comma dropped and a full stop inserted. We really are open to the process that you're engaging in. And I want to thank you so much for what has been transpiring so far, because the feedback I've got has been a very positive one. And we really do appreciate the input that's made from the public as well. So I am ready at your bidding.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Members, I put the Minister to you now. You can put the questions which concerned you at previous meetings. The Minister and his team, I suppose the Minister would have the prerogative to give it to his team to answer if he so sees fit. I don't think we want to compel the Minister to answer any tricky legal questions when he has got his legal advisor here. But in as much as is necessary, I think we'd leave it to the Minister to decide who will answer the question. And one will accept that if that is what he decides, that that would be the answer that the Minister abides by. So over to you, members. Honourable Swat.
Chair, sorry, are you waiting for somebody to start off? Let me start with preliminary question in terms of policy. I'm not going to exhaust all the questions that we raised in once, but I think this for me was an important thing, and I've mentioned a couple of times. And we had certain explanations by both the NCC and the state law advisor in this regard in previous meetings, and I, Minister, I trust you do have a copy of the bill with you. If section 2D, sorry, that is of course the Strategic Intelligence Amendment Bill. Sorry. Thanks, Minister. Minister, if we read Section 2D, it says the Minister shall regulate and authorize in writing the activities of the NCC under this section, and in particular authorize each target or communication which is to be monitored or intercepted. Now, from a policy point of view, I just want to understand what the executive sees as the specific implication of what a target or communication would mean in this specific section, and also to be monitored or intercepted, to be authorized by yourself. There was some remarks that this would lead late to the broader basis of targets, for instance, coming from the national intelligence estimates or stuff like that. In other words, broad-based areas to be monitored. But the section itself reads in a way that looks as if it's talking about very specific communications and very specific interceptions, in particular if you read it together with 2J, which make it an offence, and also putting a penalty in place, which says we intercept any communication without authorization of the minister. Minister, I just want some idea as to what you understand with this authorization that you intend, or that the executive would want to have available for you, and how that would differ from the normal way of interception, the interception of specific communications with the warrant of a designated judge. Chair, let me stop here for the moment. I think that
before you go ahead, Minister, I don't know if you understand the question. I just want to make sure that I understand the question. Advocate Switzer, you asking regarding the wording of the act. Are you looking at the wording? What is meant by the wording? You're not going beyond the wording.
Sure, I'm trying my best not to go beyond the wording. What I mean is, when we talk about target or communication or interception in this section, when you talk about target, what are we talking about? Are we talking about a phone number? Are we talking about a word like drug trafficking in a broad scanning spectrum? What do we mean with target here? That's what it comes down to.
Okay, there you have it, Minister. I think we're looking at the wording, and I think the problem the members were having is just what was meant by the wording. So I don't think we want to get behind the words, you know. I think what was felt at the last meetings were that there was, perhaps it would be the ministry from the minister's office more appropriate to explain what was been said here. So I don't think we need the thinking behind the clause. If we get clarity on the clause, I think as a legislature we can take it forth from there, whether you know it is good or bad.
Well, thank you, Honourable Chair. Let me first of all thank through you and the member the fact that you've raised something which is actually extremely important and needs to be made much clearer than I would admit is the case at present. Now, this, of course, is your work. The intention is not that the minister be involved in deciding on the targets of the NCC and therefore its operational work. That was not the intention. And you've drawn our attention to the formulation here, which speaks to just that. I can see the problem that arises. Let me immediately say that this would need to be reformulated along the lines that have already been reported back to me by my officials, because they came to me and said, Minister, we've got a problem here. I don't know if you want me to spend time going into the reasons why we had perhaps overdone the control factor and why it was written in this way. I think that certainly the members of the JSCI are aware, and the broader public indeed, about concerns that had taken place in 2005. And the fact that we are dealing with the NCC as a mechanism of state security which has enormous power. And given the problems... Yeah.
Minister, I think one doesn't want to press you for unnecessarily answers. I think the point that you make, Minister, is a good one. Because I think that's what the members wanted to hear, that the clarity is not there that we seek. And it's, I don't think we should try and analyze and interpret something which the coming from the executive is in fact considered to be a problem. And it's the intention we're looking for here. It is not here. We see the vagueness, and I think we should be kind enough to allow the executive to make clear that thing before we start to analyze again. I don't think the ministry having conceded now that there is a problem there, I don't think we need to look at it any further. Whatever the intention was, I think it's something that they need to bring back to us, and I think then we should look at it. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Minister, but I thought it you know, if that is the concession that is made, then we will accept that, and we should allow the minister then to get his team to put the thing in a much clearer way, and then we can look at it better. The Honourable Landers, and then I see the Honourable Swart.
Chair, yes, I think I must also echo our appreciation to the minister for his concession with regard to 2D. Can we, minister, just at a practical and logistical level, try and understand how this is going to work? As I understand it, the NCC, and I assume they will consult with other role players, then formulate a set of targets, which they will then come and present to you and say, these are the targets we believe should be put into the system. As the minister, you will then look at these, either reject or approve all of them, some of them, whatever the case may be, and then present them back to the NCC. So we will not then have a situation where you, as the political head, pick up the phone and say to the head of the NCC, listen, this fellow Cecil Burgess, this is his telephone number, I want you to put it into the system. Or something. I'm using a very ridiculous example deliberately. So if I understand you, that is what you're saying to us. That's not the intention. And if it seems that way in the bill now, then we need to correct that. But in correcting that, we need to understand then, from a practical point of view, how this will actually work. And Chair, if I've tried to keep it within the bounds of your earlier ruling. Thank you.
Let's go to the Honourable Swatan here.
Chair, if I may add on to the Honourable Landers. You see, once again we talk about target and the example used by mentioning you as an example. Being again brought up this whole thing, and that's why I asked initially, what do we mean with target? I think just for clarity of this meeting, we need to get to some understanding or some differentiation between what we are talking about. Are we talking, when we talk about the so-called target, are we talking about an individual telephone number, or are we talking about buzzwords that, you know, in a broader scan basis? Now, adding on to that, that's important for me because and I want to thank the Minister for his answer, and that makes it, well, it gives us clarity as to something that was a real of concern. But just in the example, we went back to the to that possibility, and I do know the intention is not and can never be for you even to get a list of targets, and when I talk about numbers, to get a list of targets from the NCC as requested by whoever, Elias or whatever, and you authorize that. I'm quite sure that is not the intention that we talk about. So, Chair, just for clarity's sake in this discussion, because all the time, even last week, the moment we talk about target, we talk about either broad buzzwords or we talk about, and we can't get that distinction that we can really say it is not this that we're talking about, it is that we're talking about. Now, I want to add on to that with two things, if you allow me, just to conclude this round of questioning in the same way. Is it the intention, from a policy point of view, that the NCC in any way would enter any telephone number of any person without the authority of the designated judge? And why I'm asking this, and it's not a question that should have people from outside fall on their backs. Chair, we do know that in other democratic countries like Canada, for instance, there is no such thing in the broad scanning of these things. But I just want to know the intention. Are there any intention through this bill and through this system to get to a point where that will happen? Or can I accept that for purposes of the bill that we're dealing with, any reference to target would not mean a telephone number, it would mean a phrase or something that computers are able to pick up? Chair, and then in the same last thing, if the minister says that the intention was not for him to be involved and to regulate these things through his authorization, then I took it also that section 5 of the bill, which authorized the minister to make regulations contemplating the authority, the authorization in section 2D, would also then be of no cause. Because that's another thing that we were concerned of, Chair. I think what we need to inform the minister is the fact that it seems from this bill that he is now allowed or authorized to make regulations on his own, on the way he does, he gives authority of things. But I mean, that should be consequential if that other problem is sorted out. But Chair, just that clarity for once and for all, that we just differentiate, or when we talk about, if we want to talk about a telephone number, let's not talk about target, let's use the word telephone number, just for that distinction, please.
Before you proceed, Honourable Minister, the issue relating to the actual bill and the wording of the bill, where we are actually seeking clarity, I think those questions would be fair. I think perhaps in trying to present us with a clearer view of what is actually intended in the clauses which you are questioning, we will allow the ministry to come back and give us what the intention is of that particular clause. I'm just concerned now that you're looking at the broader intention of targeting now. I don't know if the minister is in a position to answer, because I think presently in the bill we don't have a definition for target. And then the whole question of foreign intelligence is perhaps something which also needs to be looked at. But Honourable Minister, in as much as I've allowed the question relating to the actual wording of the bill, I think it should be competent for you to answer.
Thanks, and I think the thoughts as expressed by the Honourable Members do give me an understanding of where we might be concerned and where problems might lie. So I am going to try and assist in relation to all those important queries. First of all, I think it's absolutely correct, this view, that the executive is not party to deciding on names that should be loaded into a system. That should not be the case, and the intention is not for that. It's not that the minister would have that power and call in the executive of the NCC and say, he has a list of names, you load them in. The loading in of names must come from intelligence, and therefore from the intelligence agencies in their approaches to the NCC or the NCC itself on the basis of its mandate to scan foreign airwaves and use their various methods to be able to identify possible threats from individual calls. From abroad, we're talking, not internal. So, therefore, the regulation we're looking at is in terms of a policy which comes from the executive in terms of the minister's mandate and responsibility to spell out the policy and the regulation of how the NCC should function. They, in turn, would have to act the way Mr. Landers has indicated, not in its entirety. They wouldn't need to come to a minister with every single foreign call they want to load in, because they cover, as we well know, a range of very strategic, top-level, top-sensitive issues which are more import to the executive, to the minister governing them, right through to very low-level police cases of the transport of Dacha from Mozambique into KZN. I wouldn't expect, and you wouldn't expect, that they would come to the minister with the number of somebody in Maputo who's linking with somebody in South Africa in relation to that, and to get an approval. This is what we're wanting to convey in terms of the regulation, the guideline, because certainly something which is of strategic importance and highly sensitive, let's say a particular figure in the country, no one would want to wake up and find a particular figure in this country who is claiming that they are being their privacy is being invaded without good reason. So if there's something of that nature, we would expect from the NCC to be able to say, Minister, we've got intelligence in relation to the following. Okay, but bear in mind, because I'm moving on from this question of the regulation, the authorization factor, which I've said the minister will not be involved, or the president behind the minister, in compiling that list of names, to this question which I've now moved into of what is the target. So please bear in mind, and perhaps we, through this process and our interaction, the period with the JSCI, as members there well know, because they've helped so much to bring us to the stage we're at, to ensure that the NCC is an instrument that only interdicts, loads into its system, foreign calls into South Africa or through South Africa. And therefore, Honourable Paul Swart, if we are talking then about a target, we're talking about a foreign individual or a foreign organisation engaged in threats to the country and our constitution, or involved in transnational syndicated crime. And therefore, that particular number would be loaded in. Now, we might well have got that number in the first place through the NCC scanning the airwaves for all signals, and through its computerized systems, etc., able to capture through word signal systems, triggers, particular conversations. It already perhaps based on other intelligence accumulated that such and such a syndicate uses the following type of code words. So we're able to now capture, out of the millions of signals, particular one which indicates the individual, the syndicate, and now we want to load that foreign number, London, Istanbul, Maputo, wherever, into the NCC system. Because capturing it from the ether can be a hit and miss thing, as you well know. Now we've actually got the number, foreign number, they load that number. So target relates precisely to that. But I do emphasize that the job stops there. And I know there's another question coming, and I'm very happy about that, which links in. And that's the incidental numbers. What then happens? I know I'm jumping ahead. I feel that hopefully I've answered the queries that have arisen. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, honourable members, I think we were clear now on what was meant there. Particularly now that the minister gives us clarity on that link in with the regulation, which is worrying the honourable Swart. But I think we will also wait for the clearer wording on this thing. And perhaps before we go on to further questions, so that those present here that's not familiar with what this NCC does, and I don't mean to spell out, but just in a broader sense, we are dealing with an institution here that is very useful and very necessary in the fight against crime, and also an institution which detects any threats that the country might face, and particularly used to protect national security. And so when the media gets into dealing with this thing, it should not be seen that there is some process underway here where we are intending to infringe on people's right to privacy. It's acknowledged in the country at the moment that there is a need to step up the fight against crime. There's a need to step up the fight against the threats to our national security. And if the potential of the NCC is properly understood, then it would be understood what it is that we are busy trying to do here today. And I think one of the things that the members are concerned about, and rightly so, is that the institution not be used for something that it was not intended, particularly the abuse. And it would be irresponsible of the legislature not to look into those aspects. And I think that's what the members want clarity on. So, honourable members, I think having said that we all understand here, everybody, what we are busy dealing with. This is not another process to infringe on rights. This is a serious process where we need, as South Africans, to take hold of the serious crimes. And this is an institution, more than any of the institutions that has been in the forefront of those issues. So, honourable members, over to the next question. I see the honourable Swartz. Is there anybody? No other honourable Swartz.
Chair, I do not have the next question. I just want to make a closing remark on this, if you allow me. The reason I went into detail, as from the JSC, I know what this is all about and the background, as was mentioned, but this is an open meeting. And that's why I went as far, because the way we had to address these concerns could easily have created an impression out there that there's something going on that may result in the invasion of privacy without the proper authorization in terms of a designated judge as Indirica. And that's why I asked, because I wanted the executive to say in an open forum that is not the intention. And that's why I said it is not. And I know it is, but I also want it said here. If you think about what happened the last 2 weeks while we dealt with this, well, in an open meeting, it would be easy for outside people, be it the media or civil society, to get the impression that there is something fishy going on. And our concern were a lot more with the wording than... I was never concerned about the intention to do something. I had to argue the wording, because the wording could lead to somebody outside coming to that interpretation that it may be the intention to do this. And that's why I wanted the executive through the minister here today to state it clearly in the public, in the open, that there is no intention to at any stage target a call going from in South Africa outside, or call it a South African number. Of course, there's a definition thing that we will look at those things without the proper warrant of a designated judge. I just wanted that to be stated here. And if that's indeed the case, I know it is the case, then at least I think in some way our colleague Slinky, who left, is always concerned about us communicating with, in terms of matters of intelligence, with the public out there. And I think in that regard we maybe gave a proper message. I know there are some people who didn't even know about the existence of the NCC and thought it is a new vehicle we are now trying to establish here, and what, you know, with all the warning lights going on. So, through your chair, thank you, Minister, just for that. I want that to be an open on record.
Okay, thank you, Honourable Swart. Anybody else? Honourable members, while you're thinking, perhaps I can put a question or two to the Minister. Honourable Minister, there is this amendment to the bill allowing you to dispose of and fix, to delegate your authority to dispose of immovable property. I think there was a feeling that it would be extending your authority to fall. I think the members felt that delegating your authority to paint buildings, and I think that's the example that the Ms. Millard used when she addressed the meeting, was quite okay. But actually to dispose of immovable property, I think there was a bit of a problem there, that as one was expecting that you wouldn't dispose, a minister wouldn't dispose of many buildings in his term. And there should be no reason why the minister himself shouldn't take that authority. Why should he delegate it? So perhaps just some input on that one, Minister. And then the other question of major concern was the standalone approach. And we don't want too much, but there was a consideration and concern about the executive and the policy decision to have the NCC as standalone. Perhaps you can just give us some idea. We did have some input from your staff about looking at overseas considerations and so on, but perhaps just shortly, what was the reasoning and the understanding of a standalone NCC with its own DG?
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Perhaps I'll deal with that one first. It's arisen quite logically, in fact, out of the development of this very important facility that has been built up in our country over a long period of time, and just the fact that reference has been made, a facility that goes back from well before 1994 and is a facility not unique to South Africa but actually is found in many, many countries, from America and Britain to Sweden, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and quite a few in Africa, lots in Asia and Russia and China, etc., all governed in various or different ways. We're talking about outward would feature in a democracy, but we talk about a strategic facility, one with enormous power, and one which is growing, and the ambit of which will also increase over time. So international practice has pointed to the fact that such facilities are standalone. They're not part of a foreign service within a country. It's foreign external service, intelligence service, or the internal domestic, you know, whether it's SAS or NIA or MI5 or MI6 or whatever, that it needs to operate in a statutory way with its own legislation, and most important, accountable from its top direction, Director General in our situation, to the executive authority, whether it's a Minister of Intelligence. In some countries there's not, so it would report then in Britain to the Foreign Minister, in some many countries directly to the Head of State and so on. So there's clearly a very logical reason. In addition, at present, it resides under the NIA, Domestic Intelligence, Counterintelligence Organ. But its work isn't simply internal domestic, as we've already seen from our discussion. The primary focus is external and foreign. It also is of major value to the police service and crime intelligence, financial intelligence. So we have found, as we've worked with NCC and built it up and invested, that it's far more logical that it's standalone. And I would say, in terms of what must be the overriding concern, which I believe that I share with your ad hoc committee here, and certainly JSCI, and that is that we've all come together to grasp the fact that where you've got a instrument of such power, that you have to be very, very careful to ensure jealously that that power is not abused. And if you have that particular institution under the wing of another agency, rather than directly responsible to the executive, then it's easier to conceal abuse. So these are the reasons, and I must say I'm very, very sure in what I'm saying in this respect.
Thank you, Minister. Perhaps just the next question. I think that answer is sufficient. The question...
Just where have we got that? Yeah, it's so inclusive. Sorry, just thinking a bit loud here.
Yes, then perhaps just be you. Yep. Let the minister first concentrate when you put the question. As soon as he's finished, I'll allow you to put the question. Before you proceed, the Honourable Swartz wants to put a related issue.
Chair, thank you for allowing me. I mean, you talk about the delegation of the authority to acquire immovable property and also the sale of that and the fact that those are now things that can be delegated by the minister. Adding very closely to that is also the thing that immovable property can only be acquired and apparently minister, due to the current changes to section 70 of the PFMA, it's now changed to say with the concurrence of Minister of Finance in terms of acquirement but not in terms of this of the sale of such immovable property. Now if the idea is because of the well, also the delegation of the power, but if the idea is to ensure that compliance with all financial input to have concurrence of the Minister of Finance with the acquiring of immovable property, surely the same argument should be used with the sale of such property, because it's just as open to abuse or possibilities of those things. But may you, Minister, while you are being advised by Ms. Miller, just to think about the point that we are now putting in the Minister, in concurrence with the Minister of Finance, apparently because the Section 70 of the PFMA are being amended at the moment. And is that seen as an interim thing that we have to get back to the PFMA again, or is it seen as now replacing the legislative framework of compliance in the acquirement of immovable property to replace that now with just a concurrence of a minister, albeit the Minister of Finance? That seems to open up the possibility of special circumstances which may very well be outside the PFMA in terms of this thing. I'm just concerned about those. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, Honourable Minister, before you go, I think what we're looking at as a committee is just whether it is intended that these powers be delegated. I don't think the other issues regarding maintenance is an issue. It's just a question of immovable property, acquiring and sale. I think that's really the issue. If that was not the intention of these amendments, and I don't think, and you say so, or you know, then I think the wording is not really an issue then.
Look, there's a lot of technical aspects here. Let me say, in terms of the principle, that I would agree. It's quite correct. If the minister has to take responsibility for purchasing a building, not an outhouse or a garden shed, but a substantive outlay, and perhaps we need to indicate the levels, anything over R1 million or so. If the minister has to sign off on that, then it must surely follow the logic that if it's going to be disposed, there must be symmetry, and the minister should actually sign that off. I think that the tenure of what was meant here is in a rather over-technical way to just bring everything in. So you've had examples given to you about, well, the minister should surely be able to delegate the authority to repaint the academy at a cost of 2 million maybe or whatever, without the minister signing off on that. This is something the principal can be delegated to do, the maintenance, the repair. And we therefore obviously have to look at this. It's too much of a mangle, the way this thing is phrased at present. I would readily agree. We need to indicate the levels, because obviously there must be delegation of powers as well. On the question of the PFMA and that particular technicality, I would ask you to let me get back to you in terms of that, because I need to consult what the intention is as far as Treasury is concerned. We're basically just needing to comply with the Act present, even though we later might have to change things.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Yes, Advocate Swart.
Can I just now get the idea in terms of policy? Is the intention that these two functions, the acquiring and the disposal, should be, and they should be able to delegate those functions? Is that the intention? Because it wasn't. It was part of those things that was outside the scope of delegation previously. Now, in this bill, in section 11, amongst various things, it just takes retaining all the other powers the minister may not delegate. It is now taking these two out, so in future these may be delegated, and there's no indication as to what level of delegation we are talking about. So I just want to know, in terms of policy, is the idea that the acquiring and the disposal of immovable property should now be powers to the minister that he can delegate to some level? And
I see the problem in the way this was written. It says the minister may, in writing, delegate. So we're dealing here with the problem that all ministers and all departments face, with the enormous amount of menial signaturing of documentation, and we can't operate unless there's delegation, whether it's in purchasing, selling, and innumerable other areas. So there was the may factor here, which just gives the minister leeway to judge. However, Chairperson, I see that there's concern in that may, without us stipulating a ceiling, that if the minister must sign him or herself on the construction of a building or the purchase of a building, the same should apply when we sell that building. And this is why I'm of the view now that we should also stipulate the levels. So we could indicate anything over a certain scale. But this it would be written in the regulations.
I don't think that we picked up consent. We just want clarity in terms of these things. Personally, I'm not saying that I'm concerned, because even if you delegate things, you're still accountable at the end of the day if you didn't use proper judgment in the delegation of such powers. So I'm not really concerned about those things. And I agree with the minister. I just want to know, because you know it's there all of a sudden, this with the Minister of Finance, and then there's this one just taking those two things out in terms of things that may not be delegated. I just want to know, was that the intention? And it's fine. If it was the intention, we as a committee will deal and say, well, we're happy with that intention, or it needs to be curbed to some extent or whatever. So it's not. I don't think it's a concern that the minister might think it is from us.
Yeah, thanks, Advocate. So I think what the minister is saying now, that the concern has raised additional thinking on because it seems to me that the ministry did have, or the executive did have, some intention of delegating these things, but had perhaps lower figures in mind. So I think what we were just hearing here now was the minister thinking aloud and on the issue. Perhaps we should allow the ministry to clarify and crystallize its thoughts on this particular thing, because I'm sure there would have been a lot of discussion around that, particularly with finance and that, and I think we need to get some clarity on that. And so I think the minister's already agreed that he'll take this back and give us further input on that particular thing. Any other questions on the members?
Yes, since we don't have the opportunity at all times to have a minister here, let me not abuse it, but let me utilize it properly. And I don't think it's not really a policy thing. I just want to get. It's important for me, Chair, dealing with these things. I'm not privy to a study group meeting where I can see the way the executive thinks in terms of policy. It's important for me to understand how the executive thinks in terms of policy. Minister, just the one of the where we're changing the must to a may with the appointment of the deputy head of the academy, who is responsible for the curriculum and research function. Now, I fully understand, I mean, that's easy enough that you may found, or any further minister may found, a situation where you don't see a need to appoint a deputy head. But it's linked in this section, it's linked to responsible for the curriculum and research function. Do you intend to, if you should decide not to appoint a deputy, that function through regulations or through instruction should go, so you can give it to anybody else at the academy to do? That's fine, I've got no qualms with that. But that would then lean at the moment we say we turn from must to may, and maybe that's more for Ms. Mullock's attention, if the moment we go from must to may, we would need to take out responsibility for the curriculum research. Because otherwise you link that to the appointment of a deputy head, and if you don't appoint one, then it may be interpreted as hanging around somewhere. That's just a remark.
Thank you. I don't think it is an invited answer from the minister. Any honourable members, any further questions? Honourable members, if you don't have any further questions on this bill, I'm going to allow, because the minister is here, I'm going to allow one or two very limited questions on the information bill. Really things which you might feel that the assistance of the minister might be useful. Now, I know we did not intend to do this today, but the minister is here, and I think we have finished earlier than what we intended with the minister. But I don't want to abuse the minister in this regard. I thought, in a very kind manner, perhaps the minister would be amenable just to deal with one or two questions. I will limit the questions, and I won't allow you to abuse the minister in this regard, because we are still very early stages with dealing with that bill, and so I will allow very friendly questions, not any tricky questions. And if the minister is kind enough to say he is prepared to deal with it, then I would really appreciate it. I will protect you, minister, because I know you did not come here with the intention of dealing with it. And again, if questions are very legal, you could refer it to your legal people. But I think it's so nice to have the minister here on these rare occasions, although the minister has always made it quite clear that he's always willing to attend these meetings. It's just that circumstances sometimes prevail that the minister is not available, and that has been unfortunate in the past. But seeing it easier, I think I will allow one or two questions. Okay.
Chair, if I just might address you, I just need clarity as to, at a later stage, if we find the need, if the minister would be available for a proper discussion as to various policy things regarding the information bill. I personally feel at this stage it's very preemptive for me to now start asking questions about those things, without us as a committee trashing some specific things out. I just want to know if you're telling me the minister would be available at some stage within the next 14 or 15 months that we will be dealing with this bill, that then it's fine, then I'm not going to ask any questions in this regard. But if you giving indication that the minister may not again be available, then you also can't say but now you are allowing one or two friendly questions. Then we need to get into
Honourable Swart, let me first correct you. I don't know usually referring to 14, 15 months as if you know something about this bill that I don't know. You know, at the moment we have as legislatures been delegated the task of dealing with this bill in this parliamentary time period, and that is still our aim. But we have in these circumstances admitted that the bill needs to be dealt with very carefully because of the concerns raised by many, many of the people that submitted oral and written submissions. So make it clear from the chair side, there's no intention to be dealing with this thing for 15 or 16 months as we sit here now. I think it will be the committee's decision as to whether the minister would be needed at some later stage, and that's not going to be excluded, if that answers your question. I just thought as a courtesy, you know, we might extend certain friendly questions to the minister, just seeing it easier. And if you find that for some reason or another you don't have a question, it's fine. The Honourable Landers? Perhaps, Honourable Minister, there's been a concern about the wide definition of organs of state, and I think that perhaps would be something which I know your legal team has given and explanations and that, but perhaps you can give us some indication of this wide definition. Why the necessity? What is the thinking behind that? Is it a die or all clause? Can compromises be met? Have you considered other ways of regulating? I can just inform the minister that the information bill that we're dealing with now relates to it's going to have effect on organs of state, and all organs of state are going to be obliged. They would be the jurisdiction of the bill will cover all of them, and so the question is just now, what is an organ of state? We have a definition in the Constitution. The argument is that this definition goes beyond the Constitution's definition, and there's concern that it might apply to organizations that don't, in which the bill doesn't really have an interest. I know your staff has previously explained that there is a procedure in the bill that allows for exemption. It seemed that the presenters were still concerned that might not be sufficient. So I don't know if you have some early thoughts on it. Perhaps you can just share that with us.
Thanks for the preliminary remarks and the kindness. You seem to be really inclined to protect me today. I suppose it's because we've got such a mean-looking bunch with us. But I'm really ready at all times now and in future. I do also appreciate what Advocate Swart has said, that one does require a certain degree of preparation. You're going through the process of the submissions. I've been watching these submissions and finding them extremely useful. And from that point of view, one of the reasons why you haven't heard much from me on this bill is it's with you. It's with Parliament. You're meeting with members of the public, the organizations of the public. I'd really want a free flow between you, and for you as a committee to have a particular input on the very important bill that we're looking at. But obviously I'm more than ready to assist. The organs of state are very broad, as we know, and we're talking about three spheres, from the local to the provincial to the national, and we have to address that. But what we say in the bill is that that we will apply very wide-scale exemption, because we don't foresee that the Department of Health or Education would have that kind of sensitive information, documentation that you would find within defense or trade and industry, SAPs, and departments of that nature. And when you go through to provincial and local, obviously there are more and more where the question of the need for confidentiality or the categorizations in mind do not apply. So there's the question of exemption from complying, and this is in terms of the whole sense that we're trying to convey. So it's not intended to apply to organizations that don't have classified information.
I think what we read from what the minister is saying is perhaps a lot of what the members and themselves have discussed informally, and that is that it's certainly something we can look at. If it is not an intention that this thing should apply just willy-nilly to everybody, then perhaps we should look at a better way of capturing it in the bill so that concern can be set aside. And I think the minister has brought something to the committee which we can work with. Because the impression created in the media now that is everybody was caught up in this thing and nobody was going to escape, and that all information was now going to be trapped in this legislation, and there was going to be this major infringement on the free flow of information and the rights that exist in terms of the Constitution and the PIA Act. And there was a frenzy in the media that this was just not right. And I think that was one of the major concerns. And I think if we understand from what the minister is saying now that it's not really the intention. What is intended is that those departments that do have information that needs protection certainly will not be exempted, and those that don't have anything will be exempted. And perhaps we'll have to look at just a proper way of capturing it so that we address that in an appropriate manner, and that it also works practically, you know, because if the bill, for example, is only going to apply to 10 institutions, but 1,000 is going to have to apply for exemptions, you know, you've got all these applications, perhaps one needs to deal with the practical way of, doing away with the applications rather than saddle whoever it is, the minister or some department, with dealing with a whole host of applications rather than, because maybe an appropriate way would just be to list the institutions that it is going to apply to, and say that the schedule can be amended if it becomes necessary to add to those that the bill will apply. So what I'm saying is, I'm just thinking about maybe there's a schedule in which the organizations and the institutions to which the bill does apply appears on the schedule, and anybody that's not on the schedule, the bill does not apply. You see, and then as it becomes necessary, you just add somebody to the schedule. That would make the work of the people that's dealing with applications a whole lot easier. So, but I think the important thing we get from the minister is there's room to understand this thing in a better way and to deal with it in a better way. And I think perhaps now the media can be more friendly in dealing with that aspect, because it was not the intention from what we hear now that everybody be trapped and that they be allowed to escape only under very stringent conditions. Honourable members, any other? The Honourable Landers first, and then the Honourable.
Yes, I'm grateful for that, and also for the Minister's comments. Minister, just two things. It was pointed out to us by someone who has daily dealings with the archives. One of the requirements in this bill is the use of the archives. And this person says that in his dealings with the archives are hopeless. That if it is our intention that the archives play a crucial role in the protection of information, then our objectives will not be reached. We will fail. So I'm not sure at the time of the drafting of this bill whether your staff and officials were aware of this. But if you are able to, I'd like to hear your comments in that regard. Secondly, there's a provision in Clause 21 that says that the head of an organ of state can delegate his authority to classify, and we have serious concerns with that. And the scenario that was painted in the hearings before this committee was that you'll have, at the very lower level, someone deciding whether a member of the public should not have access to very mundane information, everyday information that is freely available. Now, we understand the intention of this bill, and we have the privilege of serving on the Joint Standing Committee of Intelligence, and there are some of us who demanded that this bill be tabled at the time that the controversy arose with regard to the Brouwersmaal report. And perhaps in doing so, we put in place certain unintended consequences. And this may just be one of them. Of course, as Parliament and the legislature, we have the right to change that. But we just thought if you could just respond to those two things. One, the question of the archives, and secondly, the delegation of authority, because you don't want, as Dean Smuts is likes to say in this committee, a bus company in Kokonap can then decide that its schedule, could then become classified top secret. It's ridiculous, but that is the import of the clause as it stands.
Before you proceed, Honourable Minister, we had a presentation from SAR, a joint presentation which was done on behalf of SAR and the Nelson Mandela Foundation. I think the Honourable Landers is referring to one of the presenters from that team that raised this question, and I think part of what he was saying is that he had worked previously at the archives. Before you also answer the question, Honourable Minister, I have reported to the meeting that the archivist, is he called an archivist, called me. He also wrote a letter to say that they were consulted in drafting the bill, and that they had seen no problems. There were challenges, and these words challenges always have multiple meanings. There were challenges, he said, but they were very happy with the bill. Now, in that context, I think I hand over to the minister. I don't think I want to not disclose that information to the minister when he attempts to answer the question.
No, and thanks for that, because I am well aware of the consultation with the National Archive. And in fact, as an amateur historian, outside of my hat as a minister, as somebody who has and tries to find some time for research, there's been the whole Quito Carnevale issue, which I've written on. And I've had personal experience of the system and how it is improving and what problems still remain. But of course we can very easily, as I think has happened when you make reference to presentations to you, I say this because the same outfit that you refer to, so this NGO, I spoke at a meeting at which they were present on protection of information, and they totally confused what we're doing with the PIA legislation, the promotion of access to information, which is under the control of another Department of State, and where it's clear that insufficient resources have been provided to enable, and I found this myself, to enable any member of the public, or indeed a minister, to try and locate information. So it's there in the archive, or it's there in foreign affairs, or in defense, but they don't have the tools and the aid, and you're having, quite frankly, to deal with one solitary official who has some intellectual memory of what there is and goes trying, ferreting away to help you. So what is needed is proper administration. But we do need to keep in mind the fact that there are two different departments or agencies and two different acts, although it's very clear that there must be synergy between both. In terms of that point then to Honourable Llewellyn Landers about the hopeless factor that anecdotally has been referred to, that's obviously a person's particular experience under that act, the promotion of access, and I can empathise. But it is possible to get somewhere where in the past there was just a brick wall. And I, you know, as I say, I've actually experienced it myself and seen how, not that I was pulling weight as a minister, because I had some researchers assisting me, that one could make great headway. The question of the delegation from a head of organization down to low-level decision-making, etc., I think this is a very important point, because we can't simply leave it to juniors who might then apply themselves in an extremely bureaucratic way. And I would actually agree that we need to look at that, but the spirit of this is that obviously you can't load a single person at the top with all that responsibility in terms of the classification factor, so that there does need to be some proper provisions made that of course in the first place justify decisions about classification and the aids in relation to that. The whole spirit is to free up documentation, and we would need to apply very clear-cut guidelines. And certainly I'm not laughing at the Honourable Member who said this can apply to a bus timetable. Perhaps it's actually a nice witty way of saying, look, you know, there can be such abuse, and it can go in the opposite direction. So we must ensure with the guidelines that officials concerned carry out their duties in terms of the spirit of this act. So I do take the point that's been made here, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Ms. Lyming. Advocate Swat had a leftover question from the previous one. Let's just hear that.
Thank you. Yes, you saw my two fingers. yeah, Minister, you see, the main thing with this, and I hope you get another opportunity at some later stage with a fuller complement of the committee and maybe more people from civil society when we discuss these things. I think it's very enlightening. And it's really sad for me that Slinky, in our instance, she's ill, but she's not here because, in a smaller sense, we are doing what she's all the time complaining about, talking about these things. And we really appreciate you being here. It's very difficult when you, and I fully understand the officials, I mean, they can't enter into long discussions about the policy or why certain things need to be doing. So I really appreciate it. Chair, and to you, Minister, and that's exactly the problem with this bill. I understand the spirit, and it comes clean from the preamble, from all things. The spirit in which this is written is clear. But there are so many things that are so broad, and that's where the public's concern is. There are so many things that are so broad that it could so easily be abused. And of course, you know, the old argument, if we don't even know what is classified, how would we know if it's correctly classified? And those are the things. So while we fully appreciate and understand the spirit of this whole thing, and I do, I can assure you, from my point of view, I do. We work together long enough, I do. But we need to look at how we can tighten these things. And that's why there may be a leftover. And I think the state of organ thing, there's two major things in terms of the broadness. And I don't even get to this intrinsic value approach or the thresholds of classification. Two very broad things. And the one is the scope of the bill, all organs of state. And the other one is the so-called national interest. And I would prefer today, Chair, not to get into national interest. I'll save that for another day with the minister. But in terms of this, so just a follow-up in terms of this organs of state. Somebody said here at the last count, I can't remember exactly, I think something like 1,600 organs of state at the moment. Now I'm quite sure, and that would include all the water boards, all those things. Now, Minister, I mean, we need to say, if you or your department, the ministry, not department, are in any way able to come up with a schedule like the Chair said, if you're able to do that, to come up with a schedule, say, these are the departments or the organs of state that will be affected or fall within the jurisdiction of this bill when it becomes an act. And we then put something in that say, all organs of state, any organ of state outside the schedule can apply to be included. Because the argument is, now you say everybody, and maybe 1,500 or 1,600 need to apply for exemptions. You know how many will not, and you know the possible abuses from a, and that's exactly what Alan said, I mean, you know, you're cooking up, but I can tell you, and all of us in constituencies, and I presume you as well, can tell you that it is so easy to walk into a local council's office in some department there and be told, no, you can't get this information. Now that's particularly a problem with PIA. My concern is now all of a sudden everybody will start, because they always have the power to do these things to some extent, but it's never been so widely advertised as is with this bill. So you can understand that in all organs of state, everybody will now all of a sudden think, oh, you know, I can classify documents, or at various levels we can classify documents. And we need to seek that, otherwise we really will fail our democratic and constitutional obligation. So if at all you're able to come up with something, it would surely be easier for us to have a schedule and a section or a clause, when it comes to an act, that says any other organ of state can apply to be allowed to classify certain documents, if it is a very small percentage it's actually supposed to involve. Rather than say everybody and now applications are exempt and you deal with 1,000 exemptions. And of course, I can assure you that will also put our democratic citizens' minds very much at ease, if you can get something. But that's my question, Chair. Would a sensible schedule, would you be able to make up a sensible schedule? Because this whole thing also ties into some extent with the national interest versus national security discussion or problem. The wideness of those things. Minister, I think you were not here when we had the public hearings. I at one stage said to somebody who talked about this, say it shouldn't be national interest, it should be national security. I said, well, it's very easy and very fine. We changed it to national security,
and I can, in all the other aspects that is covered here in the definition of national interest, I will pick up something there that I would say this is national security, and for that reason it might be. But that is once again, maybe we'll still, I will still argue those things, once again get to a point where you narrow down the broadness, but you are also at all times able to administer it to where it needs to be administered. In other words, when people say we should not talk about stable monetary system, I say, well, it's very easy for me to say that's not national security. I say, well, it's very easy for me to say that something threatening the stable monetary system would, as far as I'm concerned, be national security. So I might as well call it national security, and then the people start arguing about not national interests. But that's something that we will deal with. But I'm just using this to add on to this broadness of organs, that, that because of the dangers inherent in this, maybe we should get to a point where we try and narrow the application down, but leaving it open to accommodate what need to be accommodated in various things. Sorry, Chair, that was now a long discussion, but we don't get the opportunity often, and I think it's important that we have these things in the open, the way we feel about it. So, Minister, I don't think we should get an answer now, Chair, because I don't think it's something you can just say. Maybe the Minister and his and the Ministry would look at the possibility of getting to a schedule and advise us that we are not in such a area that we need an answer now. And that would be a much easier way, and that would allay a lot of fears. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Swart. I don't think that's a question, if I understand you correctly, but it's a long comment, and I think it merely adds on what I've said earlier. I think the Minister's made his point on the organs of state. I think we get a sense from what the Minister's previously said that it was not meant to catch everybody, rather than be responsible, and it was in that context that I said, as a person of view, I was just suggesting if that is the case, perhaps the schedule would apply. And so you're merely repeating, I think, what we said. But I think you do raise the concern that has worried us, and we offer that merely as a suggestion to the Ministry for consideration, you know. Because if we understand that that is a possibility that we can look at, then obviously it would be a whole lot easier to look at, because we don't have to at this stage worry with the schedule. We just deal then with the legislation. Otherwise, you're going to spend a lot of time on trying to understand whether organization X is actually going to be affected, or whether organization X is going to have to apply for an exemption. So I don't know, Honourable Minister, whether you want to respond. I think we understand you on this point, and I don't think it's necessary for you to respond further unless there is a comment which you want to make. I see the Honourable Members don't have anything further to say, but Honourable Minister, another area of concern, I think, where you could give us just quick some clarity is the appeal process. There was this concern that perhaps the Minister should not be the appropriate person to appeal to when classifications have been rejected, or if classifications have been made. And I'm just wondering whether this was a necessary provision, whether we are stuck with this situation and it should be the Minister, or whether there is room to understand that there, as a legislature, we could look at something in addition to satisfy these concerns of the presenters. Just shortly, what your view would be on this.
Thanks, Chair, and I'll be very short. There is certainly room to look at another mechanism of oversight other than the Minister. The idea that's been forthcoming in quite a strong way, the provision of an independent oversight mechanism to adjudicate disputes. This is something I would be very interested to hear about. And I would also perhaps venture to say that had actually been in our minds prior to discussions at Cabinet.
and there it was changed because of the concerns about proliferation of these public structures. So there is no real objection as such, and I think we must be sensitive to the issue, and therefore please follow this through, and I really look forward to your considerations in this respect.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Honourable Members, I see Advocate Swart is raising. Is there a question, Advocate Swart?
Yes, Chair. I mean, you open up every new... I said I would wait, but I mean, you open up all these items and then we will participate. Minister, no, it's not really a question, it's just a remark, but something for the Minister to contemplate. We understood it that way, that you had no problem that Cabinet changed it. But her colleague Llewellyn there stated something a couple of times already, and we are very concerned about creating all these new bodies, because often our legislation made provision for creation and years later nothing happened. And eventually we closed them down like the training sort of things here. But it doesn't matter. The remark was made, why I want to put it here, Chair, let me just say this, because of this being the Minister for Intelligence and operating that broad framework. Colleague Londis said that maybe we should look at the Office of the Inspector General as such a body who already exists and can be further empowered to be the appeal mechanism. I don't know if the Minister wants to make a comment on that. If you would find it really inappropriate, or if you would find it independent sufficiently to address the problems from the public.
Advocate Swart, I think I heard the Minister saying he's quite happy to hear what we have to say. And unless the Minister wants to add on that, because I understand that the Minister is amenable if there is a, you know, for us to deal with the matter. It's not written in stone. But I think the question of the IG as an appeal can obviously be one of the considerations. And I don't know if you want to just comment on it briefly, Minister.
Thanks, I think you're correct. And I know Advocate Swart so well. It's the first time I sit in a meeting and I find him so irritated. But clearly, the Inspector General would be a possibility, and it does take into account the concern of colleagues at Cabinet and your own concern about proliferation of structures. But I really, really leave it to you to come up with your recommendations.
Honourable Members, any further? Perhaps I'd just report to the Minister that from the public hearings and also the written presentations that we received, of which all did not appear, we had the positive feedback is the fact that nobody seems to be against the legislation. Not one of the presenters said there was not a necessity for this legislation, and I think it is in the areas of concern, some of which we've raised, that the presenters were concerned. So I think what we need to find is this balance to alleviate some of the concerns raised by the presenters, and I think let the media and those people that are interested in the process understand that there is no decision that has been taken here as to the manner in which this committee is going to be dealing with this bill. The intention is to deal with it in a responsible manner and to talk about it and to hear the views, and I think that is the reason why we called the Minister here. And I think the Minister has been very helpful. He's been very honest in his approach, and we must respect that, and we must use with some of the things that he's told us today in helping us with our process forward. So I want to thank the Minister, if there's no further questions, for him being here today, Honourable Minister, with your team. That you made yourself available. You have heard that there is an interest in meeting you perhaps in a future date if it becomes necessary, and we trust with your relationship that you will avail yourself when it when it so becomes necessary. Just as a way of closing, Honourable Minister, I think I give the mic to you just to make some closing remarks on the process, and then we will adjourn for tea, and the Minister would be excused from the process if he wishes to be, and we'll come back after tea just to deal with one or two small items. I don't think we'll be very long. Honourable Minister, over to
you. Thanks so much, Honourable Chairperson Burgess, and thanks to all the members for the questions and the exercise here today, for a very genial atmosphere, not one that lacks critique, but I must say that the whole character and the nature of the JSCI, where we've become such a working team, has certainly permeated this ad hoc committee. It's very satisfying to find that. And I know that within the committee there are so many more limitations than there would be in the JSCI. I'm really indebted to you, Chair, for the way in which you've guided this session here. And as I've indicated, I'm very ready to come before you again. I stress once more that this whole process is to help us to create better legislation that will avoid the unintended consequences, will serve our people better, will serve our state better. It's not that there's a chasm between state security and that of our people. We all understand from the Constitution the need to balance the right to privacy and dignity on the one hand with the need to safeguard national security in the real sense. And of course, that does take a great deal of intellect, of maturity, but most of all, the right legislation and the right mindset of our people. And there's no way in which, having gone through a very lengthy process, which took us over a year, before we presented to Cabinet the Protection of Information Bill and the other two bills we've been looking at today, that I felt satisfied and could say to my team, fine, we've got it, it's wrapped up, it's ready to be sealed, signed, delivered to the nation, and we'll get it through Cabinet and we'll get it through Parliament, and I'm unable to see anybody who can logically challenge any formulation that there is. I made it clear to my team right through and at the end, right, we've got it through Cabinet, we're going to go through a process here of listening to the Parliamentary Committee and listening to what the public have by way of input. So from that point of view, I know we're having quite an uphill battle, not because there's anything wrong in the mindset of the public and civil society, but because all over the world, and particularly in our country, the apartheid legacy, and in fact, let's face it, some of the abuses since 1994 have made our people extremely wary and suspicious. However, there has been a comment made by quite a learned journalist who takes his journalism seriously in quite a important weekly, who said of the bill initially that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I don't like that phrase. I would say that the road to heaven, Llewellyn, is paved with good intentions. But since, Honourable Chair and Members, we do have a minister here who is not a believer, and I don't believe in heaven or hell, by the way, but I believe in a morality and our constitution, and the morality that resides from that, and in terms of this portfolio and our work together, the fact that we must serve national interest, national security,
that must really be in our minds and to achieve the balance. And therefore, I would say, you know, the road to national security must be paved with the best of our intentions. I hope that the said journalist picks up my remarks through members of the media over there. There are, if I might just say, having been earnestly looking at submissions so far, without making my mind up, wanting your own infusion of all of this, but I am well aware, on the one hand, that the issue of the national interest, as has been referred to, is a big issue. And let's debate that through. There's no set position. Is it possible to find a better way? I'm very open to hearing the inputs. And then there's the question of the public interest exemption clause, which has come up. And that's very important as well. So it's not that we're coming with a bulldozer. We've heard very deep concerns there, and let's engage and see to what degree we can accommodate these particular concerns. Hopefully at the end, we're not going to be able to please all women and all men, but in the end that we can arrive at a act which really serves the best interests of our country in terms of the Constitution. Thanks very much again, Chairperson and Honourable Members, and those who are with us from civil society. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. The meeting stands adjourned for 10 minutes for tea, and we'll come back just to wrap up with one further item. We just have a very small item which we still have to deal with. You were handed a document this morning. I'm trying to find my one now. Just let me yours. If you remember, we were scanning the legislation, just a broad scan, and we were dealing with the Intelligence Service Amendment Bill. We had finished scanned it and got to the schedule, which was on page 5. That then brought us to looking at the law that would be amended as a consequence of the amendments that is proposed in the bill. I've asked Advocate Jenkins from the Parliamentary Legal Advisory Team just to look at these schedule of proposed amendments, consequential amendments. What you have in front of you now is his response. We were particularly looking at the accuracy of the references made here, and that is his response. I think we don't intend to be very long. We have a response here. I think it's a legal response more than anything else. Also a response that deals with accuracy. I personally haven't had time to check the accuracy myself of the Advocate Jenkins document, but at least he has raised certain issues here. I think if we can just go through that quickly, if there's anything on the document that you wish to report, then I'll hear you. And we'll also perhaps just pass over to the state draft, the state law advisors, on their input on the document, and I understand that they have been given a copy. So over to you, members. As soon as we finish the document, we will adjourn. The Honourable Landers.
Well, Chair, I think we must thank you for referring this to Advocate Jenkins, and we must express our appreciation to Advocate Jenkins for the work he has done dealing with these schedules is always a headache, and the way we've done it is the correct way. It needs someone who's a little removed and that can then apply their mind to it, and so we must appreciate that. We note where he says the references are correct, then that's fine. There's no problem. And I think the state law advisors will also note the way he has shown them to be incorrect, and that that appropriate change must be made. And we ask that that be done. And then he, Advocate Jenkins, goes on to right at the end, Chairperson, to make the point that there's no part B to the schedule, and therefore there's no sense in having a part A, but that's, I suppose, that's a, I don't know whether it's stylistic or something that's normally done. And so the such corrections that have been pointed out should be made, and we move on from there.
Thank you, Honourable Landers. Anybody else? From the state law advisors, is there a comment on the document?
Thanks, sir. Can I come in? Thanks, Chairperson. I've perused the document quickly. In most instances, he is confirming that the references are indeed correct. The only instances that he made a submission to say is incorrect, then it should be amended to reflect the correct citation of the bill. So I've taken note of those issues whereby he said it's incorrect, then it should be amended.
Do I understand you to be saying you're in agreement with him then?
Yes, Chairperson. But if I can put you through to paragraph 3 of his document, after scrutiny I'll find out, is paragraph 3A, bulletin 2. He's saying the reference to the provisions in the proclamation 103 of 1994 is incorrect, as the short title must be Public Service Act 1994. And now if you look into the schedule, Chairperson, it's on page 5 of the Intelligence Services Amendment Bill, page 5, and it's the second column there. So the only thing missing there, on the first part of the column, Proclamation 103 of 1993, that is a full citation, that one is correct, because the Public Service Act is not called Act Number, so it's referred to as a Proclamation 103. So that paragraph, that item is correct. But the second column is Public Service Act. There's the number of the act is missing there, so that's the only thing that we're going to add there. Public Service Act, 1994, like we did in other acts as well, so that's the only thing missing there, and she's highlighted that one as well. And then in the last part, I think it's on page, item number 6 of his document, as there is no part B to the schedule, it makes no sense to have part A. Yes, that is correct, Chairperson. I've already noted that one. I've removed in my set of amendments, I've removed part B. Thanks, Chairperson.
I note that when I raised the concern, you didn't think there was a fault. You will recall I also raised this concern earlier. I must also note that Advocate Jenkins has got a stronger legal opinion than myself. What about Clause 5 before paragraph 5 of his document?
Mm-hmm.
I've picked it up when I was going through the schedules again after our last meeting.
So I'm talking about the first bullet of paragraph 5. The second bullet, he says, is fine. Are you in agreement with that?
Yes,
that comment made here?
Yes. Not the whole wording should be underlined.
Honourable members, I think unless there is any other comment or point you wish to make on the scanning of those two polls, then I think we almost come to the end of this process today. Next week we are faced with plenaries, I think, during the afternoon period, and I think there's a number of pieces of legislation that would be coming through Parliament, and it probably won't be appropriate to be sitting in the afternoon. I understand from the staff that the JSC I might want to meet urgently next week. I still have to clarify that with the chairperson. If that is the case, unfortunately, we're going to have to meet on Tuesday. If it's not the case, we would meet on Wednesday. I just have to see when the chairperson of the JSC would be back in town. So if it is really possible, honourable members, I would like not to decide today as to when we will meet, but it will either be on Tuesday or Wednesday next week. So is it possible that we can just pass on that information to you, perhaps during the course of the week, and certainly early by next week? Honourable?
Yeah, Chairperson, thank you very much. Why are we not, this is a proposal, if there's a meeting of the Joint Standing Committee, starting at 9 up until 11, 2 hours, and then from 11 to 1, our meeting as an ad hoc committee. That's a proposal. Wednesday.
Honourable Bloom, I will take that proposal to the chair of the JSC. Obviously, I can't talk for him what he has in mind. You know, the powers of the chair of the JSC are much wider than any other chairpersons at Parliament, and he would, for his own reasons, because of interacting with the services, be allowed to call meetings at short notice and for specific purposes. And if this is the reason, then I suppose one will have to lies with him on the question that you, but I will take it up with him, and I think if he's finished his work now, it might well be appropriate to hear first what he has to say. So let us adjourn on the understanding that you would be given notice soon as to when the next meeting would be. What we will say is would either be on Tuesday or Wednesday. I will liaise with the minister on some of the issues to see whether they'd be ready with certain documents next week, Tuesday or so. But I think what also will happen is that most of the members that haven't been able to attend would probably be more available next week because of the legislation in Parliament. So on that note, members, thank you very much. Thank you for the press for also coming, and all the other visitors. The meeting stands adjourned.